Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokerage Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, October 4th, 2022. Coming up this hour,
the global equity rally continues for a second day. We are in Europe and Asia with the latest.
Investors are wagering central banks may slow the pace of monetary tightening.
And the Biden administration plans new restrictions on China's access to U.S. semiconductor technology.
New York City is relocating a humanitarian relief center intended for asylum seekers in Queens. Plus, North Korea launches a missile test over Japan. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. A Yankee flirted with a no-hitter and a win at Texas. Monday Night Football, the 49ers beat the Rams.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by SEI. Imagine your asset management firm's operational infrastructure as a competitive advantage. Let SEI show you how at seic.com/IMS.
And U.S. futures on the rise this morning. 5:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 56 points. Dow futures up 371. And NASDAQ futures up 212. And the 10-year Treasury up 14/32, yield 3.58%. Nathan.
Karen, this morning's gain in the futures follows the best day for U.S. stocks in 2 months. The S&P 500 index closed up 2.6%. Weak manufacturing data helped spur the rally. Some see it as a sign the Fed could soften its approach to rate hikes. Abe Deshpande is chief investment officer at Centerstone.
The fundamentals as far as the groundwork for a new bull market are there. You just don't have, I don't think the valuations are quite there yet. You certainly don't have a catalyst yet. But I don't see you know, a huge collapse or a calamity or anything like that.
Centerstone's Abe Deshpande thinks core inflation's already peaked, hitting a high point in February.
Despite some optimism that the Fed may turn dovish, Nathan, central bank officials continue to bang the drum for more rate hikes. New York Fed President John Williams says tightening still has a significant way to go. He is one of five Fed officials speaking at events today. Here at NE Research, President Ed Yardeni says the Fed should hike one more time and then end its tightening cycle.
I'm totally stumped, mystified, surprised that Fed officials don't seem to acknowledge that just focusing on the Fed funds rate as part of the monetary tightening cycle is a mistake when you also have QT2 and you have a soaring dollar. These are very restrictive monetary developments.
Yardeni Research President Ed Yardeni says the Fed's final rate hike should be next month.
Well, stocks are rallying across the globe this morning, Karen. In Asia overnight, equities posted their biggest daily advance since March. Let's get the recap from Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Australia's benchmark jumped as much as 3.6%, the most in more than 2 years after the country's central bank delivered a smaller than expected interest rate hike, while 3-year bond yields slumped the most since the RBA cut rates heading into the global financial crisis in 2008. Japanese stock surged with the benchmark topics rising around 3%. Liquidity in the region was relatively thin, with China and Hong Kong markets closed for a holiday. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. We are also seeing a rally in Europe this morning, and we go to London and get the latest live from Bloomberg's Ewan Potts. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. European stocks in the green for a third day today. The benchmark Stoxx 600 touching its biggest gain since June. Travel, technology and retail companies posting some of the biggest jumps today. A quick look at the GRR function on the Bloomberg shows that all 20 sectors are a lovely shade of green today. And Credit Suisse also gained this morning, a day after those wild durations in the troubled lender's share price. In London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thanks. Let's stay in the UK now, where it is the third day of the Conservative Party's conference. Questions are swirling over whether Prime Minister Liz Truss can rebound from the political crisis created by last week's budget announcement. Let's go to Birmingham, England to get the latest from the conference with Bloomberg Daybreak Europe anchor Caroline Hepker. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning, Nathan. Karen, some of Liz Truss's top team have been telling Bloomberg that her project is dead in the water already. A humiliating U-turn on the top rate of tax from the Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng has led her own party to question her leadership, which puts her agenda in jeopardy. The Chancellor has promised to bring forward details of his fiscal plan and the independent watchdog's assessment so that it comes shortly. But one former cabinet minister who spoke to Bloomberg predicted the Prime Minister would be gone within a year. Now the question is how the government can afford the tax cuts that it has promised, and will the poorest in society see their welfare payments sacrificed in order to balance the books? In Birmingham, I'm Caroline Hepker for Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Caroline, thank you. Back here in the U.S., U.S.-China relations are back in focus. Bloomberg News has learned the White House plans to announce new restrictions on Beijing's access to U.S. semiconductor technology. Details now from Bloomberg's Amy Morris in our 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Members of Congress have been pushing the White House to tighten controls around semiconductor equipment to China. Now sources tell Bloomberg News the Commerce Department will roll out a package of rules this week, including formalizing restrictions on technology to produce chips that are designated as 14 nanometer or better. It will prohibit the sale of tools for logic and memory chip production in China and restrict access to chips used in supercomputing and artificial intelligence. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Amy, thanks. As the war in Ukraine rages on, Elon Musk is weighing in. Recent Twitter posts have the Tesla CEO drawing the wrath of Ukrainians, including President Vladimir Zelensky. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellet explains.
Those posts urge Ukraine to seek a negotiated solution to the invasion by Russia and to cede Crimea for good. Musk also launched a Twitter poll asking citizens of occupied areas of eastern Ukraine plus Crimea to decide if they want to live in Russia or Ukraine. The survey comes as Ukraine, Europe, and the U.S. denounce President Vladimir Putin's move to annex four regions and declare them Russian territory. In New York, Charlie Pellet, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. As for Elon Musk's company Tesla, it plunged the most in 4 months yesterday after third quarter deliveries missed estimates. And it looks like investor Kathy Wood took that as a buying opportunity. Funds backed by Wood's ARK Investment Management bought more than 132,000 shares of Tesla yesterday. It marked the firm's first purchase of Tesla since mid-June. And we're watching Tesla this morning. Shares are up more than 3% in early trading. And straight ahead, your latest local headlines plus a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
It's Karen, it's 5:07 on Wall Street. Rain, 45 degrees in Central Park. Got a crash northbound West Side Highway at 158th. Details coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York City is relocating a humanitarian relief center intended for asylum seekers bussed up from Texas and southern border states. The tent city at Orchard Beach has become a magnet for anti-immigration protests. And for people who are concerned about the migrants, the city plans to house at that facility. New York Mayor Eric Adams says the city is exploring solutions for the incoming asylum seekers.
We are not going to be afraid to try different things to solve these unprecedented problems that we're facing in the city.
Mayor Adams says the migrants will be sent to Randall's Island after concerns about flooding issues in Orchard Beach. At least 16,000 asylum seekers so far for the last couple of months have been bussed up, primarily from Texas. North Korea has fired a ballistic missile over Japan for the first time in 5 years, forcing Japan to issue evacuation notices and suspend trains during the flight of the nuclear-capable weapon that could reach the U.S. territory of Guam and beyond. The U.S. said it strongly condemns North Korea's dangerous and reckless decision. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden toured the Puerto Rico-ravaged area by Hurricane Fiona. The president offered reassurance the federal government will help the U.S. territory rebuild.
We're going to make sure you get every single dollar promised. And I'm determined to help Puerto Rico build faster than in the past and stronger and better prepared for the future.
Tomorrow, President Biden plans to visit Florida hit by Hurricane Ian. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis pushed back when asked about evacuation measures in Lee County ahead of Ian. County officials have come under question for ordering evacuations too late after Ian's storm track made a late turn south for a more direct hit.
Stop. 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 Okay. This has been dealt with. The Lee County has explained what they did. They went through that.
Governor DeSantis later said the state will, of course, look over the evacuations. More than 100 people have been killed from Ian. 500,000 residents remain without power in Florida. Former President Donald Trump sued CNN for defamation, accusing the network of smearing him to undermine a potential run for re-election in 2024. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. Coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stashower.
Good morning, Nathan. The Yankees' first series in Arlington, Texas, since Corey Kluber threw a no-hitter there last season. Almost another Yankee no-hitter. Luis Severino would have taken it into the eighth inning, but Aaron Boone took Severino out of the game after 94 pitches. Rangers broke up the no-hitter, but the Yanks won 3-1. Home runs for Giancarlo Stanton and Marwin Gonzalez, not Aaron Judge. He's still at 61. Yanks and Rangers play a doubleheader today. The Mets and Nationals play two at Citi Field after last night's rainout. Atlanta off the sweep, but the Mets had only four hits, lost in Miami 4-0. But the Braves' magic number to win the NL East is still only one, which would mean a Met wild card series this weekend at Citi Field. Mets hope that Starling Marte will be able to play. They have missed his bat since he went out with a broken finger. Tony La Russa says this retirement is final. He was out of managing for a decade, went into the Hall of Fame, returned to manage the White Sox. Now stepping down, he's had health issues. Monday Night Football, big plays carried the 49ers.
Throws, it is caught by Deebo Samuel, breaks a tackle, 40. Deebo 35-30, 25-20, breaks another tackle, 15-10, 5, touchdown!
KNBR, the call. That 57-yard touchdown came after a 32-yard TD run by Jeff Wilson and before a 52-yard pick six. 49ers beat the Rams 24-9. Giants getting ready to fly to London to play Green Bay on Sunday. QB Daniel Jones' ankle injury said to be improving. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thank you, John. S&P futures up 47 points right now. Dow futures surging by 308 points. NASDAQ futures are higher by 190 points. British pound 1.1355, strengthening against the dollar as the Conservative Party conference continues in Birmingham. We check in live with Bloomberg's Caroline Hepker next. Bloomberg 1130 weather, cloudy, occasional showers and rain today. Highs only in the upper 50s. Showers will end tomorrow. We'll get into the low 60s. Low 70s are back by Thursday. Right now, rain 45 degrees.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. A rally in global markets extending into a second day, lifting U.S. stock index futures and European shares as investors wager central banks will have to slow the pace of monetary tightening. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, they're up about 47 points. Dow futures up 302 and NASDAQ futures up 186. The DAX in Germany is up almost 2.5%. 10-year Treasury up 14 32nds, yield 3.58%. The yield on the 2-year, 4.01%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.33% or 30 cents at $83.94 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.75% or $13.10 at $17.15, 10 an ounce. The euro 0.9857 against the dollar, British pound 1.1342, and the yen 144.77. Bitcoin this morning up 1.2% at $19,800. Today we're watching for reports on factory orders and durable goods orders out at 10 o'clock Wall Street time, along with the JOLTS jobs report. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. North Korea fired a missile over Japan for the first time in 5 years, further ratcheting up tensions over Kim Jong-un's nuclear program and prompting a rare public safety warning to be issued by Tokyo. The bodies of Russian soldiers were lying in the streets of a key eastern Ukrainian city today. It follows the retreat that marked the latest defeat from Moscow. In baseball, the Yankees won. Aaron Judge still at 61 homers with time running out. The Red Sox and the A's won. The Orioles and Giants lost. The Mets and Nationals were postponed because of rain, and they'll try to make it up today. Monday Night Football, the 49ers beat the Rams 24-9.
Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, David.
Okay, Michael, thanks. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. We want to turn now to the latest in UK politics. Prime Minister Liz Truss has given in on one aspect of her budget, but there may be new points of contention within her own Conservative Party. Let's head right over to the Conservative Party conference now into day three in Birmingham, England. Bloomberg Daybreak Europe anchor Caroline Hepker joins us live. So what is the latest, Caroline?
Nathan, good morning. Yes, we are building up to Liz Truss's big speech, the Prime Minister's speech tomorrow morning. But the bone of contention is this. Universal credit. It's the welfare payment worth about £334 per month to a single recipient. And it's whether or not that benefit will go up in line with inflation or not. This from the Prime Minister this morning on a media interview. No decision has been made yet on the benefit uprating. This is potentially explosive for the government. You're talking about the poorest people in society and whether or not the government actually comes through with something that the previous administration had promised to do. And it comes, Nathan, on the back of a U-turn around the top rate of tax yesterday. But this welfare payment issue is really perhaps the next shoe to drop for the government.
Well, if she's saying that there's no decision made on this crucial aspect of the budget, given the cost of living crisis in the UK, I mean, what comes next? How can the Truss government rebuild its credibility?
Yeah, this is the problem. I mean, we saw that Bronco ride of Sterling and guilt because of the mini budget, an announcement on a huge set of tax cutting policies without a real plan as to how that would be funded. And it came also without the fiscal watchdog giving its judgment, the independent organisation that gives its view on government tax and spending plans. Look, there was a bit of movement because Kwasi Kwarteng has talked now about bringing forwards the OBR predictions so that that report on the government's fiscal plans would come sooner. The FT says it could come before the end of this month. Our own Bloomberg reporters have been pressing ministers on this issue. And I was speaking to the MP Anthony Brown, who sits on the Treasury Select Committee, and he was saying it would be a great idea if we actually knew the costings for the government's plans before the next Bank of England decision on the 3rd of November. But again, we still don't know. And that is also part of the credibility issue. It's about messaging, it's about timing, and it's fundamentally also about policy. So this is a very, very difficult moment for this government. You know, the Conservatives have been in power for 12 years, Nathan.
And of course, Liz Truss has only been in power for just about a month here. But are we expecting that we could get further details from the Prime Minister when she makes that speech? Is that something that could come down at the conference itself?
Well, that is possible. I mean, the whole point of the Conservative Party conference is to gather together MPs, councillors, lobbyists, think tanks. It's the sort of whole Conservative universe here at the ICC. It's in Birmingham this year in the north of England. So, yes, there will be pressure on the Prime Minister to say more. And yet they've been quite slow in terms of releasing the details. And they have, downplayed the market impact in a lot of ways. They've blamed largely still the problems of the government on the inflation shock from the war in Ukraine, and they've wanted to take very little responsibility, you know, for the unfunded tax cut plan. So yes, all eyes will be on Liz Truss tomorrow. She speaks sometime between 10 a.m. 12 lunchtime, and there'll be, of course, a big build-up before we get to her speech. Kwasi Kwarteng's speech was only 20 minutes long. It was very, very brief by conference standards, Nathan.
Only about a minute left here, Caroline, but what's the level of support among Conservatives for Liz Truss right now?
Well, I was speaking to Ipsos this morning. Amongst voters, extremely dubious is how I'd put it. The latest polling from Savanta Comres puts the Labour Party 25-point lead over the Conservatives. That is the highest vote share for Labour since Comres started polling. It feels very much in the country as if the polling and voters have tipped towards the Labour Party in a big way versus Conservatives, and that has happened very quickly just in the last couple of weeks as Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng have come into office.
Yeah, it's been pretty stunning to watch even from this side of the pond. Thanks for this, Caroline. Great having you on with us this morning from Birmingham, England, where the conference of the Conservative Party continues, and we will be watching very closely as Prime Minister Liz Truss gives that speech at the culmination of the conference. You'll want to keep it with Bloomberg Radio to get all the latest on the turmoil within the UK government right now. Looking at the British pound, it's gaining strength against the dollar right now at 1.1340. As far as futures go, those are gaining strength as well. S&P futures up 49 points, Dow futures up 323, and NASDAQ futures are higher by 198 points. The 10-year Treasury is up 13/32, yield to 3.58%. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather, clouds, occasional showers and rain today, breezy with highs only in the upper 50s. Showers will end tomorrow, low 60s. We'll be back in the low 70s by Thursday. Right now, rain in 45 in Central Park.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston, Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960 to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
Five 30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures rising this morning on the heels of the best day for stocks in 2 months. Still, there's room to go lower from here, and that's according to Wealth Enhancement Group Senior VP Nicole Webb.
The market may come down to kind of that 13 times to 15 times multiplier. And when we get there, the S&P looks more fairly priced within reason, closer to 3,000. And so we do think when you come through that support of 3,600, there's probably still room below that to go.
Wealth Enhancement Group's Nicole Webb says the U.S. is likely entering a period of structurally slower growth.
In the meantime, Karen, Fed speakers continue the drumbeat for higher rates. New York Fed President John Williams says tightening still has a significant way to go. Williams is one of five Fed officials speaking at events today. Priya Misra, head of global rate strategy at TD Securities, thinks the Fed won't stop hiking anytime soon.
We should be pricing in a recession. I think a recession is pretty much baked in the cake for next year in the U.S. And I don't buy the shallow, short recession argument. This could be much longer lasting because the Fed is going to be reluctant to start to ease. They're so worried about the 1970s that I think they're going to be late on the way to easing policy. So the 10-year is attractive as a risk hedge.
Priya Misra with TD Securities says rate hikes could continue into next year.
Despite the hawkish rhetoric, Nathan, global stocks are rallying this morning. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index rose more than 2% overnight, and Europe's Stock 600 is currently up 2.2%.
In England, Karen, it is the third day of the Conservative Party conference. Questions are swirling over whether Prime Minister Liz Truss can rebound from last week's budget announcement. Cabinet members tell us Truss will struggle to enact key parts of her economic plan because her standing in the party is already so damaged.
On corporate news this morning, Nathan, Elon Musk is weighing in on the war in Ukraine. The Tesla CEO enraged Ukrainians in a series of Twitter posts, saying that the country should seek a negotiated solution to the invasion by Russia and cede Crimea for good. Ukraine's President Vladimir Zelensky responded in a post of his own, questioning whether Musk supported Ukraine or Russia.
And we have news on U.S.-China relations. Karen, Bloomberg News has learned the White House plans to announce new restrictions on Beijing's access to U.S. semiconductor technology. Sources say the Commerce Department will roll out a package of rules this week.
And futures this morning are higher. S&P futures up almost 50 points. Dow futures up 316. NASDAQ futures up 197. The DAX in Germany is up about 2.6%. And straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. 533 on Wall Street. Rain, 45 degrees in Central Park. Lots of crashes with these wet roads. Michael Barr has more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. New York City is relocating a humanitarian relief center intended for asylum seekers bussed up from Texas and southern border states. The tent city at Orchard Beach has become a magnet for anti-immigration protests. And for people who are concerned about the migrants, the city plans to house at that facility. New York Mayor Eric Adams says the city is exploring solutions for the incoming asylum seekers and that everyone is safe.
We're going to provide the public safety. That's my responsibility. My responsibility through the police commissioner, the police department, all of our law enforcement entities is to make sure that the communities where we have any shelter, migrants or not, that is safe.
Mayor Adams says the migrants will be sent to Randall's Island after concerns about flooding issues in Orchard Beach. North Korea launched an intermediate-range ballistic missile over the Japanese territory for the first time in 5 years. Residents in northern Japan were told to take cover as the missile flew over and fell into the Pacific Ocean. Japan says North Korea's latest missile launch is reckless and strongly condemns it. President Biden and the First Lady arrived in hurricane-ravaged Puerto Rico, hit by Fiona. The U.S. territory was hit by Hurricane Maria 5 years ago. The president says he wants to make Puerto Rico resilient with $60 million in infrastructure aid.
And yes, Puerto Rico is a strong place, and Puerto Ricans are strong people. But even so, you have had to bear so much and more than need be, and you haven't gotten the help in a timely way.
President Biden will visit Florida to survey Ian's damage tomorrow. A high-stakes January 6th trial kicked off in D.C. District Court. Five members of the far-right militia group, the Oath Keepers, face decades behind bars. The defendants are charged with seditious conspiracy. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stanshaw.
Nathan, it's one of the things you never used to see in baseball and now see all the time. A manager taking a pitcher out even when the pitcher has not allowed a hit. Just the third start for Luis Severino since being injured. The playoffs around the corner. Severino was at 94 pitches through seven innings, and Aaron Boone removed him.
Decision that sucks to have to make because he was, you know, very efficient too, you know. The decision would have been if he was through eight at that point. You know, I didn't really want to go more than 90 with him today. I was going to try and let him finish that seventh inning no matter what.
Rangers broke up the no-hitter and the shutout eighth inning off Miguel Castro, who just returned from injury. Yanks still won at Texas 3-1. Giancarlo Stanton hit his 30th home run. Aaron Judge did not hit his 62nd doubleheader in Texas today. Mets and Nationals will play two at Citi Field after last night's rainout. The Braves had champagne ready to go, but lost in Miami 4-0. Their magic number still won. The Phillies celebrated. They won to clinch their first playoff berth since 2011. So the 12 playoff teams are known. The matchups still to be determined. Week four ended with the 49ers' 24-9 win over the Rams, who they've now beaten seven straight times in the regular season. All four teams in the NFC West are 2-2. The Jets are 2-2, yet to win at home. They host Miami Sunday, and the Dolphins' quarterback will be Teddy Bridgewater. Tua Tagovailoa out with his much-debated concussion. Tyrod Taylor is in concussion protocol. And Daniel Jones has an injured ankle that is said to be improving, but the Giants, Sunday in London against Green Bay, may have to start third-string QB Davis Webb, who's never thrown a pass in an NFL game. John Stachel with Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thank you, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Here's Bloomberg's Scott Carr.
The Manhattan housing market is calming down, a report from appraiser Miller Samuel. And Douglas Elliman Real Estate says sales of co-ops and condos dropped 3.7% in the third quarter from the previous 3 months and more than 18% from the year before. The median price on transactions completed slipped 7.6% to $1.15 million from the second quarter. Moody's has upgraded New Jersey's outlook from stable to positive. The announcement follows a string of three credit ratings upgrades with a positive outlook from all four major credit rating agencies. Moody says pension contributions and maintaining liquidity above historic averages are among the factors that could lead to further upgrades. Law firm Rome McGuigan is disbanding after being a downtown Hartford, Connecticut mainstay for over 40 years. At one time, the law firm based at 1 State Street downtown had about 20 partners. That's the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Scott Carr.
Thank you, Scott. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potisk on 1010 Winds in New York. We're talking about Manhattan's housing market showing signs of cooling down.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Charities may face a funding squeeze with plunging markets and rising inflation.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WHAM 1180 in Rochester, New York, I'm reporting that Google's self-driving truck program is hauling beer from Dallas to Houston under a pilot program for Constellation Brands.
I'm Stephen Carroll on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We've been reporting on the UK's Chancellor bringing forward his fiscal forecast to calm turmoil on financial markets.
I'm Scott Carr on WTAM in Cleveland. I'm reporting on a big federal contract just landed by a medical research team at Case Western Reserve University.
Yeah, those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. Pension funds are supposed to be among the least exciting financial institutions. Yet last week in the UK, they were the center of an incipient financial crisis. What led to this was a variation on a well-known theme: leverage meets unforeseen events. The danger when these two collide is not confined to any one country, so regulators everywhere should take note. While the world's banks are somewhat safer than they were before the crash of 2008, risks that start outside the traditional financial system still require greater attention. The more leverage held by non-banks, such as pension funds, hedge funds, and insurers, the greater the dangers. Regulators need to remember that low-probability events aren't zero-probability events. Eventually they happen, and when they do, they can cause serious harm. One day, if regulators do their job, pension funds will be boring again. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. Futures moving higher this morning. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 1130 weather: clouds, occasional showers and rain today, breezy, highs in the upper 50s. We get into the low 60s tomorrow as showers come to an end, bringing us sunshine for Thursday and highs in the low 70s. Right now, rain and 45.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. A rally in global markets extending into a second day, lifting U.S. stock index futures and European shares as investors wager central banks will have to slow the pace of monetary tightening. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 52 points this morning. Dow futures up 338 and NASDAQ futures up 204. The DAX in Germany is up 2.6%. The 10-year Treasury up 17/32, yield 3.56%. The yield on the 2-year, 4%. The NYMEX crude oil is up 0.8% or 67 cents at $84.30 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.9% or $15.30 at $17.17.30 an ounce. The euro 0.9869 against the dollar. British pound 1.1351. The yen 144.70. And Bitcoin is up 1.8% at $19,950. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. North Korea launched an intermediate-range ballistic missile over the Japanese territory. Residents in northern Japan were told to take cover as the missile flew over and fell into the Pacific Ocean. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that liberating settlements from Russian occupation is now the trend. His comment comes after the strategic eastern town of Lyman was fully cleared. The town is part of the regions Vladimir Putin annexed following referendums termed illegal by Ukraine and its allies. In baseball, the Yankees won. Aaron Judge still at 61 home runs with time running out. The Red Sox won along with the A's. The Orioles and Giants lost. The Mets and Nationals game postponed. Monday Night Football, the 49ers beat the Rams 24-9. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts. more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined now by Ivy Jack, head of equity research at Northstar Asset Management, as we look at futures rising on the back of a rally yesterday to start the fourth quarter. Is this bounce the trend, Ivy?
We will probably have mini bounces, but, you know, I've got to tell you, we're still very cautious. There are many things going on right now, and I believe it is really hard to sustain any kind of optimism at this point in time. So we're just hoping to, you know, make it through the fourth quarter and tolerate the level of volatility that we've had, we continue to expect.
How much further volatility are you expecting? What kind of range are you looking at?
We don't necessarily, I would say, have a range per se. But again, when you look at going into the wintertime, first of all, you know, what's going on in the UK is very worrisome in terms of a possible currency crisis. We're also concerned about the wintertime, higher electricity and gas bills. We're also concerned the consumer, middle income and low income consumers are stretched there and here in the US as well. And on top of it, when you think of all of the, you know, we're in hurricane season for folks down in southern Louisiana and the southern areas. And so all of those things coming together make it really hard to think about what the fourth quarter could be. And on top of that, by the way, I didn't even mention coronavirus. It's still with us, and it still could have an impact on us in a variety of ways that we might not even anticipate.
So are you focused more on some of those exogenous headwinds than the focus on the Fed and what it's going to do, not just in the fourth quarter, but into next year as far as interest rates go?
No, we're focused on all those things. And I think in terms of the Fed, I expect the Fed to continue raising rates. I mean, look, here in the U.S., we're still gaining jobs. I think for September, you know, we're expecting about 200,000 jobs. So, you know, even though I think some fundamentals still look strong, and I still think the Fed has some work to do in terms of taming inflation. But again, there are just so many things that are unexpected that could happen. There's so many variables, I would say negative variables out there that, again, hard to be positive in the fourth quarter. I mean, we're going to maintain a defensive posture going into 2024. And so, you know, we might have a bounce today, but I would tell you, you know, I don't think it's going to be sustained.
A defensive posture going into 2024. So you're expecting that the Fed, it sounds like, is going to continue with higher for longer interest rates for some time and could potentially raise interest rates even further into next year. Is that your call?
Actually, I meant to say 2023. I've gotten ahead
okay.
of myself. I'm already thinking I'm in 2023. So now we're expecting the Fed to continue raising going into 2023.
Okay, good to get that clarification. So in terms of defensiveness, what does that look like for portfolios? What are you advising your clients?
So for us, it's interesting because it's the same that I think that, you know, in terms of our strategy, even during good times, you know, we look for companies particularly that are beneficial to life. So, you know, we don't invest in things that we consider to be trends or fads. We also look for companies that generate, you know, strong, predictable cash flows. And look, that's across sectors. So it's not necessarily in one sector or the other. And I think those are the companies that, you know, you definitely want to be holding right now.
And just 30 seconds left here. Are you thinking that we're in a recession or are we about to be in a recession? And what's that look like? Is it a deep one or shallow?
At this point, you know, look, I'm not the NBER. You know, I can't really say if we're in a recession technically, but what I can tell you, what we do know is that, look, we know consumer spending is slowing. We see manufacturing is slowing. And even though we are still gaining jobs, there is evidence all around us that things are slowing down considerably. Now, you know, I don't know what the pace of that will be, but it's kind of like, you know, you see it coming. And so you're preparing for the storm ahead.
Thanks, as always, to get your thoughts, Ivy. Really appreciate it. Ivy Jack, head of equity research at Northstar Asset Management. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It's 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Union officials say Starbucks agreed to resolve federal labor board charges that the company unlawfully retaliated against workers for organizing activities at a location in New York City. A federal judge in Washington state freed Knight Transportation of some claims in a wage and hour suit alleging it stiffed more than 500 truckers on wages. Aetna Health of California defeated a proposed class action by a medical provider that accused the insurance company of underpaying for COVID-19 testing.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Jeff, thanks. Now another legal story we're watching. This month marks the 50th anniversary of the Clean Water Act, and yesterday, during the first day of oral arguments in the new Supreme Court term, justices considered a case that could limit the reach of the act by allowing fewer federal restrictions governing development and pollution. The case involves an Idaho couple's long battle to build a house about 300 feet from Priest Lake in northern Idaho on land that federal regulators say is protected wetlands. For more on the case, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to environmental law professor Pat Parento of the Vermont Law School.
A lot of this argument was wonky. Definitions in the Clean Water Act. What's the main question?
The question of EPA and the Corps of Engineers' jurisdiction under the Clean Water Act is a pretty classic environmental regulatory kind of question that's come up over and over. I mean, the Supreme Court, this is the fourth case where the Supreme Court has had to wrestle with this question of federal jurisdiction under the Clean Water Act. What we do have in the Clean Water Act and this geographic jurisdiction question is a fiendishly complicated scientific question. At the heart of it, it really is a line-drawing problem. Where do you draw the line between federal jurisdiction and state jurisdiction in a watershed? The Solicitor General kept saying, you know, if we try to draw a bright line, we're going to be attacked for picking an arbitrary line, because it varies so much across the country. You can imagine the different climate between the East and the West, the different topography, and so forth. So, you know, the court really wants something closer to a bright line sort of test, but it may not be possible.
This is Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's first oral argument as a justice, and a lot of times in the beginning, justices hold back, but she was an active questioner, as they say.
Oh boy, was she ever. Fourth question came from Justice Jackson. Amazing. For her very first oral argument on the Supreme Court. She didn't waste any time, and she pressed her questions. I mean, I would say she's forward-leaning in the direction of the government's position on this case. But she asked hard questions of both sides. And like I said, several times she interjected herself. So she was not at all reluctant to get right in there right away.
And that's Vermont Law Professor Pat Parento speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. Attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal at BLawGo. And futures this morning are on the rise, with S&P futures up 58 points, Dow futures up 383, NASDAQ futures up 224. Our top story is straight ahead. This is Bloomberg.